Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, you can find the show notes for this episode at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can comment, and don't forget you can also tweet us via Nerds Podcast or find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast.
Okay, so this week we are talking about game developers concerned that the Elite Spectrum keyboard and the accompanying apps aren't leading them to being paid royalties, along with Thor 3 in production, kicking into gear. Writers have been hired. J.K. Rowling regrets having Hermione marry Ron in the Harry Potter novels. And then we've got our big feature, which is giving second chances.
But first up, we're going to look at the whole situation with the Elite Spectrum keyboard. Retroid, what's going on?
Oh, plenty of things. Well, first of all, Elite is a games company which has been around since the 1980s doing games for the ZX Spectrum.
Yes.
Commodore 64. Also the Amstrad CPC, because someone had to, I suppose.
They did indeed, to satisfy me.
Oh, that was nice. But they made their name from mostly licensing arcade machines, coin-ops, and doing home computer versions. So that was quite nice. They were an all right company. I think they did better Spectrum and CPC output than they did to Commodore 64, because I've always been a bit... But, yeah, this whole thing is about their recent rebirth as a an emulator slash old game peddler on iOS and Android, where they've been selling an emulator which has in-app purchases, and you can buy various Spectrum games. They've also got a Commodore 64 app, but this is mostly about the, you know, the Spectrum. But you can buy packs for a pound or two with about four or five old or new ZX Spectrum games. Now, the idea behind this was that it was all legit. It was licensed. If you bought a game pack, the creator would be getting something like, you know, they'd be getting a healthy percentage of the sale.
Yeah.
So if you're like me and the games you missed at the time, you've only played on emulators since, it was an excellent opportunity to be able to say, right, you know, I like you and your games, I will buy your games properly. And, you know, rather than getting a C60 from someone new in the playground.
Yeah.
Which I never did, because I was totally legit all through my game playing.
I never did, because nobody else had a bloody Amstrad.
Yeah, I can see that happening, actually. I knew one boy at school who had an Amstrad CPC.
I didn't realise you went to my school.
Someone had to. But, yeah, the idea was they were bringing these games legitimately so you could buy them instead of, you know, them running on dodgy emulators. And especially with iOS having, you know, a bit of a problem with people flogging dodgy emulator apps with games that were never licensed.
Yeah.
Which did happen a few times, and those apps got withdrawn eventually. But this has all come to a head recently, because they were doing a Kickstarter for what was basically a recreation of the original Dinky, if you think netbook size, original ZX Spectrum 48K, which had a rubber keyboard, membrane keyboard. And the idea was, if you funded this, if you bought one of their keyboards in advance, as, you know, Kickstarter, you know, works, you would be able to sit your iPhone or iPad in front of the ZX Spectrum keyboard, and it would work over Bluetooth. So you'd have the 100% legitimate, because they've licensed the software, way of playing your games just as you remembered them.
That's cool.
But,
yeah, it's a nice idea.
Definitely.
But.
Now, as it turned out, just as it was picking up steam, just as it was getting to the end of the Kickstarter, there were people popping up whose games had been licensed by Elite and saying, you know, they've never paid me. And then someone else would pop up. And this was, I think this started off in the World of Spectrum forums, which was, you know, it's pretty much the go-to site if, you know, if you were ever involved or just played around with ZX Spectrums back in the day. And they started swapping stories about how their game was licensed, you know, about 2-3 years ago, and they've never seen a single penny from it. And they'd all thought, it must just be me, it must just be an oversight. You know, it's a small company after all.
Yeah.
But yeah, more and more of them were coming forward and saying, I've not been paid either, what's going on? And then a few people were even saying, I've not given them the rights.
Ooh, nasty.
And my game is, you know, in a pack. And yeah. There are a few games where it got even shadier. Like, if you're an old games player, it's like Cookie will remember this as well. Dearly Thompson's Decathlon.
Yes.
Yeah, classic joystick waggler, because
You didn't have a joystick, you had to burn the keyboard into oblivion.
Yes, where you just had to hammer alternate directions. Yep. To try and get the speed up.
Yes.
I think I remember that.
And the problem with that was, of course, the right to use Dearly Thompson's name had long since lapsed.
Oh, no.
So Elite, by the sounds of it, went to Dearly Thompson and said, do you want anything to do with this? And he said no. And it's like, fine. And they put it in the app anyway.
Oh, God.
So apparently that got its name changed, but there was at least one other game, which was, I think, possibly Attic Attack by Ultimate.
Yeah, I remember
turned
that
into
as well.
Rare, who, yeah, of course, got purchased by
Microsoft.
Microsoft eventually, where that game got included in the app, but they just edited out the copyright notice and the Ultimate logo.
No way.
So it got increasingly shady, and all that was blowing up on the last final few days and hours of the Kickstarter appeal. It did cross the £60,000.
Yep.
So it is funded, but several of these game creators are going to be taking Elite to court and saying, you know, you promised, we've signed contracts.
Yeah.
And you've not paid us a sausage. So... yeah, this is about the last thing that Elite needed at this particular point.
That is...
Definitely, but on the same token, I'm glad they've been caught out in a way, because it's not really fair on the other guys.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's just a pity, really, that the Kickstarter crossed the threshold, because if it hadn't, then all that money would have been returned.
Yeah, of course.
Now, one of the interesting little snippets I've heard about this is that Elite, as a company, have debts, or at least they did recently have debts of around about £60,000, which is the exact amount that this was being
supposed
funded
to
for.
Being funded.
Oh, bloody
yeah!
That's,
and it, you know, so it's incredibly. There are all kinds of people. I mean, the way this has been covered in the press has not helped, because several websites were calling it the relaunch of the ZX Spectrum. It's not. It's a Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah.
It's a nice-looking, custom Bluetooth keyboard. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but while people were saying, oh, I could use this with my computer and, you know, do this or that, Elite have only ever said that it works via Bluetooth and it would work off their app. They've not said it would work as a standard Bluetooth keyboard.
No.
So I think that, you know, there'd been a little wobble. Also, apparently some of their promo shots were of an actual ZX Spectrum.
Oh, no.
Slightly photoshopped and said, you know, this is what the prototype looks like. No, it doesn't.
So it does sound like it to me. I mean, this is the first time I've heard about it, to be fair, because I've been in McKay for the last month or so.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's just one big scam, unfortunately.
It has a very scammy scent to it. Also, there are issues with who owns the rights to the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah.
Because So Clive Sinclair and his company created the original Spectrum. Then they got bought up by Amstrad when they entered financial difficulties in the late 80s.
Yep.
Amstrad then got bought up by BSkyB.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. They did, didn't they? Yeah.
They did. So apparently there could be a legal dodginess about the actual likeness of the machine itself.
Oh, great.
And using the name to sell it. So it's all just, oh, Jesus Christ. Who the hell thought this was a good idea?
So they've pretty much done everything
yeah.
you could possibly think of in the absolute incorrect manner and basically just bollocks it all up.
In theory, yes, it does look like that.
There's a lot of evidence
to say that they probably have.
Yeah, they probably have, but it seems like a huge mess. They just seem very unprofessional. They could come through this. Who knows? But it casts a very bad light on the whole legitimate selling of old games through a market like this. Elite have said that they've withdrawn their Elite ZX Spectrum collection off iOS and possibly Android while this gets resolved. But a few of the game creators have said, Elite have said they want us to write to them with our complaints. They know our complaints because they haven't paid us anything. So it's just, I don't even know what could happen with this, because I just think it's a shame, because I bought the Elite ZX Spectrum emulator app on iOS. I have 116 games on it.
Yeah.
And I thought, the point of me buying those was that even if I didn't play them on my iPod, which I have, for most of them, I was effectively, just giving the creators payment, for the enjoyment I've had out of them.
You're trying to do the honourable thing.
I was trying to do the honourable thing, because up until that point, what the hell were you going to do? Try and track the down there, their home address and send them a few, quid in the post. Be a weird, beardy, retro gaming stalker. But it's like, no, you try and do the legit thing, and you find out that, the company is, if not dodgy, then doing things that appear very dodgy. And it's just disappointing.
I think I'm going to have to move us on after that, because I'm just too stunned in some ways to really
say anything.
I don't know if there's anything I can say, really.
Wow.
Well, you would think with something like, with a company that's been going since the 80s, you would think they would actually have a clue about licensing, a clue about how to conduct business.
Well, they obviously did all right in the 80s because they were one of the bigger publishers, so they must have done it all the legit way there and then.
It depends whether or not the company itself has been bought by somebody else. Like, it all depends on how much of the old guard's there. If there's none of the old guard there.
Apparently, the boss is the brother of the original founder.
Mm.
I think it was, I might get this the wrong way around, but I think it was set up by Richard Wilcox, and it's now being run by Steve Wilcox's brother, who was also running it during the 80s. So,
oh, God.
I just wondered why the hell they reappeared after all these years. I thought Elite, like so many of the 80s software publishers, because they were run out of people's living rooms, had just, dissipated. They just went
like Ocean.
Yeah. Well, Ocean is a complicated thing, but yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, Ocean was effectively the 1980s EA.
Definitely. RoboCop.
Yeah, and they did some good stuff, but yeah. They disappeared.
Okay, I'm going to move us on to our
Retro gaming sad face.
Yeah, retro gaming sad face is all round,
definitely.
Okay, next story. So, 4-3 is cranking itself into gear. Marvel announced that they've, at least for the time being, sorted out their writers. Redford, of course, is unimpressed by this news.
I still haven't seen Thor 2, to be fair.
I've not managed to reconcile my slight issues with it. It's like I enjoyed it, but I wasn't happy about certain things they did with characters.
Yeah.
Was it worse than the first Thor film?
No. It was about equal.
Ooh. Now, considering I thought the first one was crap.
Yeah. But so far, the third Thor film's looking for probably a 2016 release. The people that have been hired to kind of co-write it so far are Craig Kyle, who was an executive producer for the last film. I think he might have been involved with the first on the producer or exec producer level. And he's co-writing with Christopher Yost. And both of them have previously worked on X-Force and new X-Men comics.
Yay!
With the suggestion, I couldn't double-check it in time, that they might have co-written a bit as well. I don't know where they can go with Thor at the moment, after what happens in the second film.
It'll be interesting to see what occurs, I suppose. They're going to continue it for ages, though, to be fair, I think.
Because, like, shit really, really, really hit the fan during the second film. And at the same time, they kind of did things with her. I suppose the only thing they could do is what's revealed at the end. That would be pretty much the entire film.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say
yeah.
stuff, but yeah, I
realise. I'm trying, because obviously it's still a recent film, and I'm trying not to spoil anything for anyone, because it's not like we can just...
It's,
Yeah.
I mean, it might be actually something to do with the, how they end Avengers 2 as well, I suppose.
And also, it could be partially dependent on Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
Yes. That's out soon, isn't it?
Can I just ask one thing about the ending of Thor 2?
Go on.
Yep.
Is it all Loki's fault?
God damn, these things. I cannot say a thing.
Aha!
Sorry, people. He broke me.
Is it, go on, just kill Loki. I know that'll have all the fangirls squealing.
So is that coming out the same year as Batman versus Superman, is it?
It would be in theory, yeah.
With Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Oh, no, it could work.
Is it, what, Kryptonite Facebook pages?
I like this.
It should work. Oh, man.
Their social media is Clark Kent's Kryptonite because he just logs in at work and never gets anything done.
Well, it's not just that it doesn't get anything done, but it's the fact that social media, through enabling degrees of citizen journalism, means that Clark Kent has no need to give people the news because they've already found it out for themselves already.
Personally, I would imagine it would be because he couldn't switch between Superman and Clark Kent's profile. So every now and again, he'll post something that Superman says as himself, and as Clark Kent.
Well, no, because technically speaking, Superman, if he's got any sense, won't have... he won't have a private profile. He'll have a public page, and it'll be the Clark Kent Facebook account that's running this public page, but nobody else knows this.
This is the social media person.
Except for, obviously, Facebook, in which case this means that Facebook would therefore know the secret identity of Superman.
That means Lex Luthor would know the secret identity.
Actually, wouldn't Superman be on, you know, his own, like, you know, private account, you know, a private page, and just call it, like, Orphans United or something, and then he can just, you know, sit there chatting with Batman?
Technically, isn't...
Being all sad.
Is Oliver Queen kind of an orphan as well?
No. Well...
Depends on the interpretation,
which
universe you're in, isn't it?
Yes, it does, yeah.
Yeah. So he might be able to join.
I really
in.
Like that, you know.
He could have two accounts, but But anyway, 4-3. I could see where they're going with it, but at the same time, it really does depend what happens during Avengers 2 and Guardians of the Galaxy and anything else they decide to kind of put in there. I don't think the events of Captain America Winter Soldier will really have much impact, because obviously that's
on anything.
Well, but I mean that's coming out in the run up to, obviously, you know, Avengers 2.
Avengers 2.
Has there been rumors that they're gonna make a Captain America 3 as well.
They'll probably, but they'll probably at the same time see Winter Soldier test first.
Yeah.
I still don't understand why people like Captain America the film, because when
I quite enjoyed that. I enjoyed that more than Thor.
See, I enjoyed.
Yeah,
Thor
I thought it was better than Thor.
And it wasn't just because of muscles and things.
It wasn't just.
I also liked the Hulk film. Like, to be fair, I really want to see a Hulk film now that's got
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, playing Hulk.
Science Bros.
Science Bros. The film. And you have like, and they kind of like get the license in for like maybe the weird science theme or something.
I'd like them to see them do the adaptation of Planet Hulk. That'd be cool.
That I have no idea what that is. Apart from the Planet of Hulks.
It's
you put it in one.
Because that's that's set after World War Hulk, isn't it?
Wait, I think so.
Isn't World War Hulk where Hulk comes back?
Yes, World War
Hulk. And he's like really pissed.
But, yeah, but then...
That's not like him.
But what's the events that lead to him being sent off in the first place, which is Planet Hulk?
I know it's something to do with Reed Richards, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's right, Fantastic Four and Avengers.
I have not really clear what's going on here.
Wasn't it Fantastic Four and Avengers who jettisoned him off into space?
After he's done something. More so
that's just unkind. Otherwise, it's just very implying.
He takes over.
Oh, he'll survive it. And there's lots of radiation out there. He'll be right at home.
He really would be, actually.
Yeah. The reason why
I see? It's a very angry asteroid.
The reason why he gets pissed off is not because he's been jettisoned into another planet. It's basically because he actually creates a life on that planet. And he's kind of king, and I think something happens to his queen.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so he's out for revenge.
Dun, dun, dun.
That sounds original.
My hopes for 4-3 include having it that Jane Foster has a far less damsel-y role. That is my main hope for 4-3. You get the right balance in the first film, and then you fudged it all up in 4-2.
I think before...
I didn't think they got the right balance in the original Thor at all, but
I think before they actually kind of commit and start filming it, they should test to see whether it actually passes the Bechdel test.
Yeah, they could do that.
Well, yeah,
because I'm pretty certain the second one doesn't.
For a moment, I thought you were going to say, do like a focus group or like a test audience, which is like no, because you just get a theater full of absolute twats.
Can I just say that I know you don't like Thor, but I could kind of imagine you trying to sneak into the private sessions of test audiences and basically just delaying it constantly by saying no, that's crap, that's rubbish, don't get that.
Well, to be honest, most of my most of my suggestions for the original Thor would be get rid of that Thor bloke is shit. More Loki, because I like his character, and
Loki's cool.
Loki who plays him, does a very good job. Yeah, and if you can actually make what's-a-face character.
Oh, Natalie Portman.
Yeah, Natalie Portman's character. If you can actually make her seem smart enough to be a scientist. Because that was a large part of my problem with the original Thor, because it was just she's supposed to be a scientist and yet she's cooing the moment she sees some coconut oil.
I'm just trying to find out, because Mr. Hiddleston's actually in a film soon. He's playing a vampire. Yeah, in a thing, and I'm trying to find it. I'm just flicking through one of the just before Christmas issue of Total Film. Somebody talk. Let me flick. Somebody talk. Go on. I'm flicking.
Please rephrase that.
I'm browsing through the magazine digitally.
Looking for Tom Hiddleston. No, that's not. That's not any better.
While flicking.
I must admit,
through pages. Tops.
Going back to what you're saying, Thor was all right, but I found it quite cheesy.
Yeah.
Especially the main actor. But then I actually quite liked him in The Avengers. He seemed to work quite well with the rest of the team.
I thought that was because he was on there less. But that's just me. There's less Thor in this film. This automatically makes it better than Thor.
I like the guy playing Gallagher. Do you remember that bit?
I'm just seeing an arcade machine.
Right. Okay. Well, it's not. It's on the console. Somebody's in, you know, Shield headquarters on the helicarrier.
All right.
You know, kind of, yeah. In front, you know, kind of around like all these superheroes, yeah. And yeah, it's just playing Gallagher.
Yeah, I noticed that. He's like, oh, I approve. Because there are all those monitors everywhere. Someone's got to be playing MAME on it.
Mm.
That's what I do anyway. That's why I don't work on them. Yeah, flying aircraft carrier. Apart from health and safety, which would be a nightmare.
Aha! I found it. God, I found it. Okay. Hiddleston is going to be out. It's out this month in theory. It's called Only Lovers Left Alive. And yeah, it's a film about him playing like a vampire trying to get along in a human world. It's not Twilight. Right, cool. It's kind of like vampires deal with just all the relationships they've got, because obviously, you know, if they're having relationships with other vampires, well, that's quite a long time to be with somebody. So
yeah, I can't imagine that appealing to his fangirls. At all.
I can just imagine that as like, oh, you remember that time that you're never going to let me go, are you? You're never going to let this go.
That was the French bloody revolution. I thought we'd drop that.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on to our next story now that I've revealed.
So you didn't let me forget the time I brought the plague to Western Europe.
And why should we?
Yeah. Our food supply was off for years.
Did anyone see The Independent and I think a couple of other sites last week trying to scaremonger about plague? Saying, oh yes, the scientists, you could come back, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, and upon the backs of witch rats. And I think whichever species of rats they said it was going to come from is now less common than when the plague was originally more of an issue.
There were all kinds of things that could come back, because I'm not entirely sure if they know which particular type of plague it was, because whenever there's any, you know, burial pits from that period, one of the first things they do is they try and collect samples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See if they can, you know, sequence it. But it's like, yeah, it could come back, but we're probably better off anyway because of the immunity.
People keep catching at least one type of plague when they're out in various corners of the world at the moment anyway, through like bites from things like ticks and stuff.
Yeah.
Like do not walk into grassy areas in Mexico with your legs exposed. It's a bad idea. Or your feet exposed, because that's an area, well, apart from the Lyme disease risk, a couple of the ticks apparently are carrying one of the plagues. It's one that's treatable, but if you don't get treated quickly enough, there's a chance of, you know, losing limbs, that kind of deal.
Mm. Hooray!
Anyway, J.K. Rowling.
What about her?
She's said in an interview now for Wonderland magazine that she regrets having Hermione marry Ron in the Harry Potter novels.
Why?
This is difficult to explain. She said specifically, I wrote the Hermione-Ron relationship as a form of wish fulfillment. That's how it was conceived, really, for reasons that have very little to do with literature and far more to do with me clinging to the plot as I first imagined it. Hermione ended up with Ron, which is a bit weird. She was talking to Emma Watson for this interview as well, which is the actress that played Hermione, and Emma Watson said, I think there are fans out there who know that too and who wonder whether Ron would really have been able to make her happy.
That's Ron.
Yeah.
Are these the people who are far too involved in the books? Just calm down.
I quite liked the way it turned out to be Ron and Hermione, to be fair. I thought it made the plot go along and it made everything tie nicely. And the fact that Harry was in love with his sister Ginny anyway.
Well, you say in love. To me, the relationship actually seemed a bit more of a it was more physically based rather than one that was kind of like balanced.
But you got married and had kids at the end of it, so.
Yeah.
By the way, if you can hear a cat, I apologise.
That's right.
Cats are fine.
If they've got an opinion, it's allowed on this show.
Yes.
It's, apparently, she didn't know about the Ron and Hermione thing because she's not seen all the films. And she was thinking of watching them now because people have been harping on and all the, you know, the fuss has died down about, you know, about them a bit. And now it's like massive spoiler. I may be projecting on my cat.
But no, I felt that it made...
Either that or she's quite well informed.
I felt that actually made sense for Harry to actually go with Ginny anyway, because that way, at least the three of them, you know, it's kind of natural for them to end up, you know, in this quite solid, you know, they're almost like family.
Yeah.
Is that...
Threesome.
I just feel that Hermione and Ron's relationship ended up, it'll continue to be quite antagonistic through most of the books, even once they got a certain past a certain sort of maturity of mind kind of point. And that while they may have dated for a while after events involving Voldemort, that actually they probably wouldn't have got married.
Like, opposite of that.
Because of the fact that they don't get along that well.
Sometimes make some of the strongest relationships when opposites attract, and because they, it's like yin and yang, keeping everybody on the ground. You've got that voice there to keep you sort of centered and be there for each other.
Abandoned, like the pair of them, so not just like in the final book and obviously the final two part of films, but he abandoned them several times over the course of the novels after, like, so basically from Goblet of Fire onwards.
You can't blame him for that. The shit hit the fan and he got a bit scared, bless him.
That's another bit, but I'm saying that before that, he was kind of, like, he often left them in the lurch or just kind of, like, actually abandoned it for Hermione and Harry for huge periods of time for very, very reasons. I suppose you could sort of, like, put it towards, like, teenagers, being teenagers and all that. But I still don't think... Hermione going with Ron just didn't quite... gel.
Was it as jarring as some of the relationships on things like Star Trek?
No.
Where it's almost as if, you know, they realise that they're reaching the end and so they suddenly put these two characters together who have never previously seemed like they would.
What are you referencing exactly with that?
Worf and Troy.
That a bit, but mostly the Seven of Nine and Chakotay.
That bit, yeah.
I haven't.
Yeah, where it was just suddenly I've got these feelings for Chakotay. Really? Do you really? Honestly? Really? What? Hey, what's that? What?
I haven't.
I know it's like episode 20 odd of, you know, 26, but what? Anyway, yeah.
No,
yeah,
I don't.
I haven't watched the latest season.
You've spoiled it for Emily.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's shit. There you go.
Yeah. But I'm not... I mean, I know... Because I wrote a post on Hex today about this. Like I said, in the end, it doesn't matter because it's not going to get retconned because it's not a comic. But... however, there's always that temptation to write mirror universe stuff, you know. Always.
Yeah, but then everyone would need beards. Everyone would need goatees like Spock. Including Hermione.
I'm not sure if even Hermione would have really gone with Harry, but I don't completely agree that she would have gone with Ron.
I have to say that I would actually be interested in a mirror universe as Harry Potter, where Harry was actually put into Slytherin.
Well, you know, you've said that because now obviously J.K. Rowling's brought this point up. Yeah, they've just J.K. Rowling's obviously brought this point up now and that. Get ready for the press release next week. Your wish will come true. It's great for publicity to say something like that, and then the following week go, by the way, look.
To be honest, I'm pretty sure the fan fiction community's written most of this kind of alternative universe.
Yeah.
Oh, don't. Just get, yeah, you know, public announcement, don't look for fan fiction. Anything, you know, past PG rating, because otherwise it's going to be a world of pain. A bit like Torchwood, actually. But...
Now.
Oh, no.
Your calls are out tonight.
Oh, wait until we get to the second chance.
Oh, God.
Okay, you know what? Let's talk about second chances. We're doing it. Okay, so why are we talking about giving things second chances? We're talking about when you experience something for the first time and you're kind of put off by it and you kind of leave it alone, maybe not even go back to it until maybe even years later, and then you try it again and you're like, oh, actually this is kind of good. Or, no, this genuinely was terrible, I shouldn't go back near this again. The reason I've been thinking about this is the fact that I'm currently trying to play Final Fantasy 13 too.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Based purely on the fact that I saw an ad for Lightning Returns. I thought, oh, it looks kind of cool, but I didn't finish 13 too. I only played 4 hours of it after buying it on launch because it was the only game I could treat myself with, like, with the first paycheck that I got with my job that I've been in for 2 years now.
Just Final Fantasy as well.
Yeah, even though I've been, like, really pissed off by 13. No, I'll give 13 2 a go. While I've been enjoying the combat system just that bit more, because that was one of my major gripes with 13 and trying to play 13 2 the first time round. Despite that, I can't deal with the story or the dialogue. So far, unless there's any severe improvements in that, I will be purely playing it for just skill-based reasons rather than and tactics and stuff rather than enjoying the story, because I find the story incredibly cheesy. And all the dialogue is just... I wonder if it was better in the Japanese... Because all the English dialogue and
stuff... It's that good, is it?
All the English dialogue and stuff is just... It's just so... It's like, yes, I know you're talking about timey-wimey things, but even Doctor Who's less vague than this.
But we must do this thing, and this will happen. Why? Because it will. Because... Look! A squirrel!
So this is why we're talking about this.
And then they fight a squirrel.
Yeah. But it's
if it hits squirrel for 9,000.
So the jury's still out on Final Fantasy 13-2 as to whether or not by the end of the experience I'll even actually enjoy the game either the same as or less than 13 or more.
Is that the one where it's very choppy changey?
Yes, because they're basically kind of going along a varying timeline and you can end up with alternate timelines and stuff.
And it's not at all the bits that they cut out of Final Fantasy 13 just so they could get it out at all.
No, it's genuinely not. It wouldn't have worked as part of 13 because it is like its own sort of present, which is the I suppose the period of time that Sarah, who's Lightning's sister, the period of time that she's been taken from is essentially treated like the game's present, and everything else is either past or future to that present or an alternate.
Sounds very complicated.
It is.
Well, so there's like a, I don't know, there's someone from Final Fantasy X, but with a moustache.
Not quite. Seeing as how none of them link up other than their direct sequels.
Yeah, but shh.
Trying to link up the Final Fantasy games is, beyond a couple of the earlier ones, is far more complicated than trying to link up Zelda games.
I was going to say, is it as... mad as, you know, trying to link up Zelda where people go, oh no, because this must have happened after it's that. Can't you just accept that there spins on a similar concept and there isn't a timeline?
Well, some of them are.
Some of them are, yes. I know some
Skyward
of them are.
Skyward Sword is definitely, you know, meant to be kind of part of...
Can I talk about the things that I'm definitely glad that I gave a second chance to?
Yes.
Yeah, you get on with it then.
Okay. So the other's a video game. And that's The Darkness. And
is that the original Darkness?
Yeah, the original Darkness.
Yeah.
Because the only reason I played the second one was because I ended up loving the first one. But it took me a while to love the first one, like more than 2 years. Because it was like one of the first games we bought cheap after getting the Xbox 360. I got partway through one of the early levels whilst kind of in, like, the darkness kind of dream, realmy past thingy-bob.
The sort of World War One.
Yeah, thing.
Yeah.
and I got stuck. Like, I couldn't figure out how to get past a particular obstacle using abilities or whatever, and I just gave up. Game facts weren't very efficient in describing how to deal with the matter. I just gave up and I left it. And then I heard about the second one coming out, and the second one was looking like really good, despite being a different studio and stuff. And I was like, oh, you know, it's a direct sequel. I really should play the first one. So tried it again, and then figured out when I got to it how to get around the bloody obstacle. And I was like, God, I could have completed this game 2 years ago because the solution was so elegant and simple. It was just using one of the darkness arms to just move, like, this piece of debris.
But the game sounds very familiar.
Hadn't really described doing this much to you at any point.
Can I just say that reminds me, that's that infuriated me about Buffy Chaos Bleeds. That was one I like on the GameCube and, you know, PS2 and whatnot, and basically it had like problems like that where it's, you know, simple, oh, you have to move this or you have to activate that and whatnot, but it gave you no clue as to, you know, what you meant to do.
Sometimes it's a real problem in a game where it's giving you something and, you know, and it's a yes, use this with that. It's a, yeah, but I haven't done anything like that in the rest of the game up until this point. And I didn't even know that was possible. I'm used to limits in games, in game worlds. So, you know, when something like that comes along, it's really bloody annoying.
Yeah.
But
it's just, you didn't tell me I could do something like that.
But I was really glad that I figured out how to deal with it, and I enjoyed actually finally completing the game for the first time. I played it a couple of times through, and I just really, really enjoyed it, and then absolutely loved the second game. So I'm really glad that I gave it a second chance.
I actually enjoyed the first game far more than I did the second.
I would say as well, I think the story was a bit more solid than the first one. The second one, it always felt a bit too short.
And the first one had some nice gut punches.
But I really don't want to spoil those for people, because there are some people...
No, that's why I just described them as such. I'm not going to say one.
Okay, and then the thing that I have completely given a second chance to and has managed to win me over on the second attempt was Babylon 5.
Yay!
What do you
want?
Who are you?
This is all due to Paul cajoling me and various other terms like that into finally watching it after we got it on box set. Because I refused to watch it in previous years because my cousins had like shown me bits and pieces of it when I was a lot younger, and it just looked absolutely awful and seemed to have no substance.
Yeah, it was the graphics that put you off.
Quite a bit, yeah.
They were pretty,
but my cousins were pretty bad at explaining, like, oh, why should I stick around for this thing?
Well, because the things that blow up.
Yeah, it didn't really work. I watched it, so I really, really loved like the political and cultural and religious systems that were all interplaying with each other.
Yeah.
And it was just so amazing to watch something so in depth, and also something that had been created with such a single vision, because obviously Straczynski. He wrote pretty much every episode, I think.
I think that was like a couple that may have not been written by him, but
that is, you know, that's so unusual for a television series. But it was just amazing to watch something that had been so well orchestrated around such a set series of like ideals and ideas of where the plot and characters were going.
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, doing it that way, you don't actually get to the point where it's like, hold on, why didn't he do that, or why didn't he do this from earlier? Why is this suddenly, you know, a thing now rather than, you know, previously and whatnot?
So yeah, so Babylon 5 is something that I'm very glad that I gave a second chance to.
I can understand why you wouldn't necessarily give it, you know, much of a chance the first time around, because it did have issues. Well, it isn't a perfect series.
Yeah.
And it did get buggered about by the, you know, getting commissioned season to season.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's one of my favourite sci-fis.
It's one of mine, to be fair.
But, I mean, what age were you when you originally...
I probably would have been 12 or younger.
12 or younger. So, yeah, it really would have flown right over your head.
Yeah, there would be quite a lot going on there, which not a lot of other sci-fis would have touched on.
No.
Absolutely. One of the ones that I gave second chance to was actually Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. I think I kind of played through it the first time up to a certain point. I can't remember the exact point that I actually played up until. But I seem to have this habit of kind of picking up games that I'm, you know, really quite interested in, playing through them for a while, and, you know, don't necessarily pick them up the next day. And, you know, more and more time elapses and, you know, I don't know where I am. Yeah, so I think that's what happened with Skyward Sword the first time around. But, I replayed it. I think it was the beginning of last year, actually, wasn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah. And, really, really got into it at that time. And, yeah, I kind of saw how it kind of connected to, you know, like, all the other, you know, Zeldas and whatnot. And, yeah, just amazing game. And another one that I kind of got into the second time round was Kingdom Hearts.
What, the first one?
Yeah, the original Kingdom Hearts. Because I think I played through it, played through to a certain extent once again. Probably not that far. And I think Emily actually completed a couple of missions, and I didn't know, you know, what I was meant to be doing and whatnot. So that kind of, you know, lost my interest. And then I picked it up again and, you know, kind of played it just by myself. And, yeah, I quite got into it. I think there's a couple of games that I wouldn't mind picking up again, but I did kind of almost, like, drop them as soon as, as soon as I bought them type thing, pretty much. Like The Conduit and Mad World on the Wii.
Yeah.
And also with the Wii U, actually, with No More Heroes, but that's another one that I ended up dropping. A Wonderful 101. I ended up playing that through the day that I got it. Up to a certain mission, can't remember which. And haven't really played it since.
Is it just because it didn't quite grab you, or it's just not?
The first time round, definitely, yes. Obviously, you know, we're kind of talking about giving second chances.
So you've
and
yet to give The Wonderful 101 a second chance.
Exactly. There's several games that I've yet to give a second chance to, but yeah, that's one of them.
What were you liking more when you tried giving Skyward Sword a second go?
I know.
Because one of the reasons I've not picked up Skyward Sword, even though I haven't completed Twilight Princess, but I really liked the look of Twilight Princess, but what put me off Skyward Sword was the look of it. Because I wasn't into the whole cell shading thing at that point.
Well, it's kind of weird because it was a cross between the styles of Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. So I can see where you're going with a slight thing, but it is more of a grown-up Link compared to Wind Waker. To a certain extent, I think I found it easier because obviously I'd experienced stuff before. Maybe that momentum kind of helped kind of get me through whichever part I was either stuck on or, you know, actually made me more enthused to actually play it.
Oh, I was made to feel old the other day. My youngest brother completed Kingdom Hearts for the first time. He's
awesome.
He's not even.
There's more of that to come.
He's not even 10 yet. Trust me. And it's just like, it's the first kind of game of that kind of nature where there's a heavy amount of narrative and such varying play styles and parameters. It's the first game like that he's completed. So, yeah, I was just astounded.
I mean, I'm kind of playing through Kingdom Hearts 1.5 mix at the moment. Started on, obviously, the original Kingdom Hearts. I'm currently on Halloween Town.
Cool.
But I only get to play that when I'm in the house and Emily isn't, because she wants to play it, but she doesn't kind of want to be reminded of, like, the story and whatnot beforehand. But I've actually been far more interested in Kingdom Hearts than Emily has.
Well, you know, you play the first game whilst you're recovering from peritonitis, and then it just all seems a bit, you know, just a bit route by that point. You know, a bit routine. That is true. The first time I completed Kingdom Hearts, I was recovering from peritonitis 2 weeks. So I couldn't move much. Video games seemed like a good idea because there was no Wii at that
Definitely.
Point.
Definitely.
I'll do this.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Cookie, what have you given second chances to?
The first one on my list, which I gave a second chance to, and to be fair, I've given it a third, fourth chance, and it still doesn't really do anything to me apart from make me want to vomit. And that was Indiana Jones' fourth film, and I hate it so much that I can't remember the actual full title of it now.
Indiana Jones and the Still Better Than Temple of Doom.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That's the one, yeah. I just didn't gel with me at all. I was really looking forward to it.
It was just a bit wrong in a lot of
ways. It was, to be fair. It just didn't seem to have the authenticity or the original glow of the original trilogy, I suppose. But it just, I have tried to watch it three or four times. I've still got it on DVD, but I've actually got it on my bottom shelf, whereas the other three are on my top shelf. You know.
Get down there.
You have shelves ranked.
The upper shelves.
Absolutely, of course.
It's the five-star shelf.
It's the five-star shelf, exactly, yeah. But it's just, even on, if you have those movie days where you
try to watch all of the particular series or franchise.
Yeah, exactly. You want to do a whole movie day. I just ignore it now.
Can I just ask, what happens if you actually bought a bad porno on DVD? Would that go top shelf or bottom shelf? Because obviously
in
you don't
which
want
way
people...
would it be bad? In which way would it be bad? Just absolutely crap.
Yeah.
Just the narrative and the acting was awful.
Yeah, you know, it'd have to be the bottom shelf.
And...
It? Yeah. Have to be the bottom shelf. It still has to have the quality.
There's a few very bad puns I could do, but I'm not going to.
How many of us have got issues with the character of Mutt in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Which character?
Mutt.
Is that Shia LaBeouf's?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Crap.
Right, it should be fired out of a cannon.
Yeah.
Against a wall.
Stupid idea. Whoever thought of that should be hung.
I know, he seems to get these roles as the, you know, young kid psychic, like, say, for example, when he was in Constantine, and also when he was in iRobot.
Also,
He was good in them, though.
Yeah, but I forgot he was in those until I recently saw the fourth one. It's like, oh yeah, that's Shia LaBeouf. Right,
he's a little bit of a sidekick in Wall Street, the second one.
Money Never Sleeps. Have you heard about some of the stuff that he's got up to as a like an independent filmmaker?
Oh, the whole comic plagiarism.
Yeah, he appears to be a tool.
Yeah.
I'm being kind.
Yeah, that's not so great.
It's not good.
But is there anything else, Cookie, that you've kind of second-chanced?
Second chance, yes. Another big franchise for me. I do own all of them, again. The Star Wars prequels. Now, Phantom Menace, no. Definitely no. Attack of the Clones, after the third watch, was tolerable. I could watch that during the whole marathon, not a problem. And the third one, actually, I quite enjoyed. When you got to see Anakin turn into Darth Vader, that was pretty cool.
Apart from the... What about, pardon me? Oh, you Gilda! No!
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of acting. But the third one, I thought, yeah. The storyline, and that was... Well, it was slightly more...
I need to give the third episode a second chance.
The third episode, I thought, was the strongest of the prequels, if I'm honest. And when you
probably,
actually...
Yeah.
When you watch it all in one go, as the movie, you know, it does tie nicely into A New Hope and everything else. It does quite tie nicely in. Attack of the Clones was... my favourite moment of that was Yoda kicking Count Dooku's ass. That was cool. You know, you'd seen Yoda just drop his cane and suddenly do somersaults was quite amusing.
It was quite amusing, but it didn't really make sense.
Of course it does. He's a Jedi Master.
Not quite sure.
Then why does he need the cane? He's jumping around everywhere.
Appearances. You've got to
keep... For lols.
Appearances. Yeah.
For lols I has. Yes.
It's a tactic, isn't it? You see, I can't walk. But I can kick your ass. Bang. There you go. So that would be that one sort of half and half, because Phantom Menace, again, I still can't really watch without wanting to kill Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, the ratio of Jar Jar Binks does slide throughout the films, almost as if he realised that. It's like, yeah, I may have ideas for the character, but everyone hates him.
Yes, which is cool. And then the third one, which I've given a second chance to and actually started to really enjoy, was Smallville.
I would actually agree with that. We've experienced the same thing where it seems to be a thing where, like, the first season of something starts off really very slow, and it's not until, like, third or fourth season that things actually start getting far more interesting.
I started watching it a bit more when it went to Metropolis.
Mm.
You know, and you've got Green Arrow and that into it. Mm. That became more interesting with the Watchtower and stuff.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, exactly. But the first couple of seasons, I just couldn't get into.
First couple of seasons are quite monster of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the first couple of seasons, I think my biggest problem of it was I was very, at the time, I was younger, and I was very, sorry, you're doing what to Superman? So Lex Luthor now is his best mate, and he's living in Smallville with him, even though they never actually met until they went to Metropolis. What the fudge are you doing to it, you bunch of...
Fudgy fudsters?
Absolutely. I just couldn't get my head around that. I was just like, whoa, no, do not do this. But I then started catching it on Sci-Fi, of all things, on the reruns. And it got to sort of season 4 or 5, I think, and I started to get more into it and really enjoying it. Mm. Yeah, and the last season I really enjoyed as well.
Okay, Retroid.
Oh dear.
Now, should I start with good or bad?
Yeah, it's up to you.
Start with bad so that we can leave on a high note.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, one game I've recently, very recently, tried giving a second chance to, and that's because I bought it on the PC, and past a point with the latest update, thanks Ubisoft, it crashes.
Ah.
Thanks, that's brilliant after the several hours I've sank into it. But it recently came up on PlayStation Plus, and I've been giving a second chance to Assassin's Creed 3.
Hmm. Connor.
Yeah, the problem is Connor.
No, it's not Connor. Connor's cool.
Is it Hanway? Who you first start playing as? His father.
Never.
Oh, yeah.
He's a much more interesting character and better acted, too.
Yes.
I won't give away the semi-twist of who he actually is. But, I just thought, I'll give it a go with it. Well, I hadn't got to the proper meat of the game on the PC version before it started, crashing on my system.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, okay, I only have to spend, a few evenings of, reasonable playing to get back to that point again on the PS3 version. And I find I just can't. I'm a big fan of the Assassin's Creed games, and I just can't be bothered. Because I know that my reward, air quotes, will be getting to play as Connor.
You love Assassin's Creed 4, then.
Did you see that sort of a non-discussion that happened on Reddit a couple of weeks ago, which seemed to be from one of the developers that had worked on 3? And how they understood... Well, he's... Or she, because we weren't entirely sure, saw the whole thing as why people hate it so much is because they just kept cramming in so many different mechanics.
No.
You didn't see that?
I thought the setting was poor. I thought it was too recent. One of the reasons I played the Assassin's Creed games is because they're out of the ordinary. They're places where you don't normally get games or things set.
Hmm.
Particularly often, especially the very first Assassin's Creed game. How many games or anything do you get that set in the 12th century in the Middle East?
Yeah, that's true.
Certainly not action-based games.
No.
Yeah, so you get bugger all set in those time periods. And even though I disliked the fact that they moved it on, to
Rome.
well, you know, several centuries later, you know, 15th century, I think it was 15th century, with, you know, for Ezio.
Yeah.
I still liked Ezio.
Ezio was cool though, wasn't he?
Yeah. So, you know, there was all that. And then when they said, oh, we're going to be doing an American Revolution one, he's like, oh, God. And it's like, yeah, it's about as interesting as I thought it would be. And that isn't the setting. It's just, you know, that's one of the things I dislike about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so Assassin's Creed 3, it's I may pick it up again, but it's just, I don't know if I can be bothered, especially
play
after...
four.
I will.
Good.
A friend recently sent me a link to an hour worth of sea shanties, and I sat there and listened to them all.
It's from Assassin's cool.
Creed. So it's like, yeah, I want Assassin's Creed 4, but it's just waiting for it to come down. Anyway, so another game I gave a second go to was Mario 64. That classic, apparently.
Heathen.
Where I've tried to really like it. I really have tried because I appreciate what they were doing with it, but to me, Mario is still, you know, just about the, you know, the ultimate Mario game is Super Mario World.
Yes.
On the Super Nintendo.
Absolutely. To me,
yeah, the mechanics for 2D Mario were, you know, pretty much spot on.
They were indeed.
And to me, it went from this, you know, negotiating these levels with, you know, a lot of variety in the, you know, the 2D Mario games to Krypton Factor Assault Courses. In Mario 64, and I personally think the Banjo and Kazooie games are better than Mario 64.
Mm.
Probably because they learned from, you know, some of the issues with that. But yeah, it's, I've tried it. I, you know, got it on the N64, bought it on the DS because I thought, you know, the touchscreen controls and, you know, being able to play it in more bite-sized pieces because, yeah, you know, you have to find, you know, particular stars on the, you know, in the worlds in the pictures. You know, that might work well on portable, but it's like, no, it didn't quite gel on there either. And so far, a 3D Mario hasn't quite grabbed me. Mario Galaxy seems nice from what I've played of it.
Galaxy 2's brilliant.
Mm. I haven't got Galaxy 2, but I will. But yeah, you know, the Galaxy games to me seem like they've fixed the problems I had with, you know, the 3D Mario games.
3D Mario World's actually really good. But you'd have to get a Wii U for that.
The Wii U one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will play it eventually when it's in the bag. but yeah, from what I played of it on in the Eurogamer Expo, it seemed quite nice, but I'm just not sure about it as a full price purchase. Hmm. Although that's just me. Right. Other things I've given second go to. One of them is one I've mentioned on this podcast before, which is Avengers Assemble.
Mm. Yep.
Because I watched the first, you know, I watched it. I really didn't think much of it. It didn't quite gel. It just didn't. But relatively recently, gave it another go, and it worked a lot better for me. The characters worked better. I just don't know why. You know, when you watch something the first time around, or you read something the first time around, or you play it the first time around, it doesn't gel, it doesn't click.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a friction with your progression through it, and it just seems to just not work, and there's resistance. And yeah, I don't know why, but Avengers Assemble just did not work the first time around, but it did the second time. Other ones I've given a second chance to, and I've been rewarded, were GoldenEye on the N64.
Yay.
I played the first few levels of that when I first got an N64, and it just, I couldn't quite understand why people were raving about it. Mm. I just don't, it just didn't quite work for me. And then it just sort of clicked in my head, and it's like, oh, right, now I get it. And I never played it that much in multiplayer, which seems to have been, you know, the thing that most people remember it for.
Yeah.
But yeah, I ended up really liking you know, the single player and going through it a few times. Another one would be when I first bought an Xbox, and obviously it came with, you know, with other things because I got it after the first price reduction. But it came with Halo. And I was a reader of Edge at the time, and it got a coveted 10 out of 10. I played through the first few levels of that, and I just wondered what the hell people were on about again. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know what this is. You know, it just seems to be like a very generic space shooter with aliens. And then I think it was when I tried sitting down, and it was, well, it's got a co-op mode, you know, I said to the missus. And, well, you know, why don't we, you know, there's nothing on TV, why don't we do, you know, try that? And, yeah, it suddenly worked, and it suddenly clicked, and from henceforth, I played every single Halo game through co-op and single player.
Co-op's the best of Halo, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I like the, you know, the Halo games, because local co-op is fantastic on its split screen.
Yes, definitely.
And I've also played it online co-op with mates as well. Yep. And that works very well. So, you know, running around, well, driving around a landscape with, you know, three people in a Warthog.
It's awesome fun.
It's brilliant fun. So
I think that actually on mine, I've completed every single Halo game, just co-op, never just by myself.
Well, you should give Reach a go single player, because that looked a lot nicer in single player than it does in co-op. Whereas Halo 4 looks almost as good in co-op as it does
in single player.
Let's see. So it's got Halo, Mario 64, GoldenEye, Avengers Assemble, and another one, which is like, you know, digging up from the recesses of my memory, Project Echo. Anyone else seen that?
No.
It was an early release from Manga Entertainment, who I dislike in, you know, for many reasons, but let's not go into it. But it's a film about the close relationships of, you know, between three girls and the rivalry. So there's Eiko, Biko, and Seiko, and they're just like high school girls.
Mm.
And halfway through the film, there's an alien invasion.
Okay.
And it's just, so they're still fighting each other over, the third girl, because they just, really want to be her friend. And yes, it is just friend. And the problem I had with it was that I got it out the library just after I'd watched Akira. And if you can imagine, I've just discovered this new thing called anime. The first thing the first example I see of this anime, knowingly, because, there's been various anime on TV, but it's been so, westernized. I watched Akira, and it's like, this big sci-fi, hard sci-fi epic thing.
Yep.
And then I watch a high school rivalry comedy with an alien invasion halfway through. And it was just, I remember what, I'd got the tape, and I was watching it, and it just, I don't know what the hell I'm watching. And I just stopped it halfway through. I remember that I had actually bought Project Echo, that was it, because I was so impressed with Akira. And a few days later, I just thought, well, I paid 10 quid for this tape. I'd best try and, give it another go. And I sat down and watched it and found it bloody good.
Yeah.
So it's just sometimes if something doesn't gel the first time around, you can't.
You've got to give it a second go.
Unless it's just, it's so bloody awful.
Mm.
But
I'm never rewatching Catwoman, ever.
No, don't do it.
I've never seen Catwoman. I've seen clips. That's enough for me. I know that, of all the issues I have with, comic book adaptation films, I think that would have them all, and then it would have the distinction of being one of the worst.
Pretty much.
So it's like, I'm in no rush to watch Catwoman. That's the one with Halle Berry in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not gonna. But those that I've mentioned, those are amongst the ones that I've thought maybe it just hasn't worked the first time around to give it another go. And some, you know, several of them I'm very glad I have. And other ones, it's not for me. Because I wouldn't go on record as saying that Mario 64 was a shit game. Because first of all, I'd get lynched by Paul. I know it's not. It doesn't work for me.
Which is fair enough. I mean, Assassin's Creed doesn't actually work for Emily.
Exactly. Not everyone is going to be a fan of what these are. And I don't think, you know, the Call of Duty games are shit. I just think a lot of the people who play them are.
I think another one that did actually spring to mind, I think, was actually the original Borderlands.
Oh, yeah, because we started playing that ages ago.
Oh, that's one I've tried playing. This isn't gelling.
We tried playing it and got kind of fed up. And it was like we got it for ourselves like one Christmas. Tried playing it at the Christmas, gave up.
Yeah.
And then went back to it every year later, not long before 2 was going to be released. And we actually ended up enjoying it.
Completing it. And then we got Borderlands 2. And the same things happen with that, so it's kind of.
You just sort of stalled with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, chances are we will go back and play.
Just
replay
because we'll be desperate for something with local co-op.
Yeah.
That was the reason I got... I bought... You see, the irony is, with the original Borderlands, I bought the original release cheap from a second-hand store. Then I saw there was an offer for the Game of the Year edition of it with all the DLC on a second disc. So I thought, oh, go on then. It wound up cheaper than buying all the DLC separately. So I do actually have 2 copies of it. And we have 2 360s, so we could play them, you know, both local on our own TVs. But it just hasn't gelled. And I've got so many friends who swear by it and say, you've got to play Borderlands. And so I have played Borderlands, but something hasn't worked for me. So I've got Borderlands on 360. I also, thanks to PS Plus, I also have it. Both Borderlands I have on PS Plus.
Cool.
So it's just, they're there waiting to be played, but I haven't.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm afraid that is all we've got time for this week.
We could go on, but we won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably wise.
So it is goodbye from.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's goodnight from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
And it's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett. And I'm on Twitter. Just under Paul Blair.
That's a good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can find NerdAssemble, as I've said, and I'm going to say again, at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at NerdsPodcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google+ as NerdAssemble Podcast. Don't forget to go and check out our sister site, hexdimension.com. There's all loads of cool stuff. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.